From New Hampshire Public Radio, this is Word of Mouth. I'm Virginia Prescott. Nearly 60 years after Peyton Place was published, tourists still stop in Gilmanton, New Hampshire, to ask locals about its author, Grace Metalius. The novel shocked America with tales of small town secrets, sex, and hypocrisy, and outraged the citizens of Gilmanton, where the unconventional Metalius family lived. It became one of the best-selling books ever, a hit movie, and TV's first primetime soap opera.
On a sunny morning almost 300 years ago, a young woman was drummed across this square to do public penance in the pillory. Afterwards, they shaved her head and sent her out of town forever. But like every girl in today's Peyton Place, Betty Anderson has heard this story many times. But knowing it didn't stop her from giving her love.
The show ran from 1964 to 1969, making Peyton Place a common synonym for provincial meanness and its author an unlikely and reviled trailblazer. Writer George Kelly came across some persistent Metalius myths while writing about the novel for New Hampshire Magazine. His article, 50 Shades of Grace, The Impact of Peyton Place on New Hampshire 60 Years Later, is in the current issue. George, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for having me, Virginia. Pleasure to be here.
Great to have you here. And now, I grew up in New Hampshire hearing mm-hmm. that Grace Metalius used to go grocery shopping in a mink coat, and only a mink coat. True?
Probably a myth. There are lots of them, and they're floating around Gilmanton and all over New Hampshire, which I discovered. There are many people who really do not understand much about her at all. They've only heard things.
Well, I guess a lot of people seem to regard her as an eccentric. That's what comes across in your article. Or maybe even worse, you know, an outsider. And your article gives us a much more nuanced picture. I'd love mm-hmm. you to fill out that portrait a little bit of this Manchester girl who grew up to scandalize a nation.
Well, Grace was born in 1924 in Manchester. And Manchester was dominated by the Amersgaig Mills, which were booming at the time. And it was also sectioned off pretty well. The west side of Manchester was Franco-American, French-Canadian. And then on the other side of the river, there were Greeks and Slavs and the Irish and other people. And then in the exclusive north end, there were the Yankees. And the Yankees owned the mills. And she grew up with a mom who had dreams of upward mobility. Her mother wanted her daughter to sort of break a glass ceiling if she could. And her mother had pretensions. She refused to be considered Franco-American, and she traced her lineage back to Paris, France, which was not true. She even went so far as to buy trinkets and various things to prove that her lineage went back to France and not to Canada. That wasn't true.
So the young Grace, I guess, had a little bit of this pretension. I see that she adopted the name in high school, Grace Marie-Antoinette Jeanne d'Arc de Repentigny.
Right.
A little pretentious herself. She did get married against her mother's wishes and mm-hmm. wasn't such a good housewife, a kind of cavalier about her duties.
this is, of course, later on, but when her book finally sold, some people from the publishing house came up to interview her. And when they came into her house, which was a little, it was called It'll Do, and she lived in Gilmanton, it was pretty much of a shack. There was garbage all over the floor. It was just in terrible shape. And then supposedly she reached for what she thought was a Brillo pad, and she picked up a dead rat instead. So her housekeeping abilities were non-existent. However, there was a little nook in the house that was squeaky clean with a desk, a chair, and a typewriter. And that's where she wrote Peyton Place.
She always insisted that the book was not autobiographical, sometimes quite vehemently so, and that Peyton Place itself was a composite of towns and not about mm-hmm. Gilmanton, yet her fellow citizens really did shun her. Now, what does this say about the pettiness of Place that a town would assume that it's about them?
Well, the town actually has a point, because many of the characters in Peyton Place were thinly, very thinly veiled, including, for instance, the man who comes to be the principal is a Greek named Macris, who actually was a teacher in the Gilmanton Corner School. She forged his name on a release, and he sued her for $60,000 and won. And the few people I could catch up with in Gilmanton who actually knew Grace were very upset by the fact that she really was talking about people they knew, and they were not happy about it, and they are still unhappy about it.
Why was she so adamant about it not being autobiographical? In fact, if you could tell us a story, she was interviewed by Mike Wallace on television.
Yes, yeah. She went on. She was painfully shy and didn't want to conduct any interviews. She hated book tours. She was pretty much a private person that way. And she got very nervous, actually, and this is, remember, in the 1950s, and ripped her girdle somehow. And a young woman there helped her out. Her name was Jacqueline Suzanne, who later, of course, wrote Valley of the Dolls.
Right.
And when she had been promised that she wouldn't be asked if the novel was autobiographical by Mike Wallace, and we all know Mike Wallace, and Mike Wallace's first question was, is Peyton Place autobiographical? Well, she had learned that his name was Myron. And so she began to call him Myron, and then she brought up his three marriages. So she fought back during that interview.
Well, I mean, she sounds like quite a rebel. And I couldn't help but think about The Feminine Mystique, which was published almost a decade later, exposing similar secrets and desires in the lives of women and what they were up against. Now, did Grace Metalius take this upon herself to expose the hypocrisy, not just of small-town life, but of the Mike Wallaces? I mean, was she railing against the way things were?
Well, I think that she didn't know anything. She couldn't identify the feminine mystique. She was the wife of the school principal at the Gilmanton Corner School, and she refused to play Mrs. Schoolteacher. That's a quote from her. I think what she was exposing, or what she was attempting to expose, and I think she did it rather well, was the hypocrisy in small towns. This book really is about three women who are victims in the town, the mother, Constance McKenzie, and her daughter, Allison McKenzie, who is, that would be the question, is it autobiographical,
right?
Because she wants to be a writer, and also Selena Cross. It's about the haves and have-nots. The have-nots are the shack people. There is a fictitious mill there, which patterns itself after the Amiskeag Mills, although there is no mill in Gilmanton. And she exposed the underbelly of small-town life. She basically said that small towns are not Courier knives. Mm-hmm. And at the end of her life, there was a treasure trove of letters found that people had written her from all over the United States saying that Peyton Place was their town. She had actually written about every small town in America.
Obviously touched a nerve. Mm. We're talking about Peyton Place and its lasting legacy with New Hampshire magazine writer George Kelly. Well, let's talk a little bit about her later life, which was pretty tragic. She died before she was even 40.
Yes, 37.
Her cemetery plot, she bought all around her a plot for herself so it wouldn't be anywhere near the townspeople that she lived with.
I visited there. That's in the Meeting House Cemetery. It's a very beautiful place at the height of the land in Gilmanton. And that's one of the myths, is that the townspeople didn't want her buried near them, so they put her off by herself. And actually, the opposite is true. She bought six lots to be away from them. And people have put coins on top of the grave, and I was curious about that. And that's the coins are placed there for a debt unpaid, and also to wish the person a good afterlife.
Huh.
It's an old sort of a practice that I had no idea about. But there were the few times I was there, there were quite a bit of change there. Mm-hmm. So people visit, and someone takes care of the grave. There were flowers there, and so there are people who owe her a debt.
Well, it's interesting you say that because, her marriage dissolved. She made a whole lot of money. This, sold 10 million books or something like that.
Yeah.
Movie rights,
right.
Television. Blew through her money pretty quickly, went through one relationship after another, probably an alcoholic. George, what do you think? Who was the real victim of Peyton Place's cruelty here?
Well, I think her grandmother, Royer, had said to her, Grace, be careful what you wish for. You just might get it. And what she wanted to be is a famous author. And she, when she felt trapped as a housewife, she turned to her writing. She had always written. Even as a young child, she used to write in the bathtub over a little stool that she put there. And she was constantly writing. She turned to that for help and solace and as an escape from the trap she was in. And I think that the fame was so huge. You know, she had rock star status. I mean, they thought if they sold 3,000 copies of Peyton Place, they were doing all right. This was Kitty Messner of Messner mm-hmm. Associates who published the book. She was the only female publisher, by the way, who had that power, and she's the only person who took the book. And suddenly, even before it was published, it was on the New York Times bestseller list because her publicity agent came to interview Grace Metalius, and she simply said she hoped her husband wouldn't lose his job. And he took that and parlayed that into a big headline about 2 inches high in the Boston Herald that said, Principal's housewife, a book may cost him his job. Uh-huh. And from there, it just took off. Uh-huh. And she was an overnight, overwhelming success, and she was painfully shy. And I don't think she handled it well. She also was surrounded by the usual sycophants and hangers-on, whom she misinterpreted as people who genuinely liked her, and they were just there for her money, which she was making, you know, piles of, $250,000 for the movie rights alone, mm-hmm. let alone the book. She was also a victim of her agent, who stole money from her, and also the producer of the movie also bought the television rights, and she didn't realize it, and she got no money from the television rights. So she was a real victim of her own success. She was not prepared for it at all.
Well, George Kelly, it's a fascinating story. I'm so glad you dug into it for us. Thank you.
You're entirely welcome.
George Kelly of New Hampshire, he wrote the New Hampshire Magazine article, 50 Shades of Grace, The Impact of Peyton Place on New Hampshire 60 Years Later. Now, also, we do have a link to the article and some excellent factoids that he came up with on Grace Metalius that are just fascinating. That's all at wordofmouthradio.org. Now, coming up, another aspect of provincial life struggles to survive, the small town cinema. We'll hear that story when Word of Mouth continues.